In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. And you know that means Chris Landry, and that's already happened. It also means during the season, Russ Mitchell from College Football News, Heisman voter, which he's already – when's that deadline? It happens Saturday night. And it's after Saturday, obviously.
Right. Well, yeah, I want to say that the deadline was this past Monday, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah, I got a Heisman voter actually in the hallway with me, and he was talking about meeting the deadline. So we'll have Russ Mitchell on bottom of the hour. Coming up about 10 minutes, we're going to have Jim Nagy on yesterday from the Senior Bowl, and he had a thing. And so when you're executive director of Senior Bowl, you can have a thing. So we rescheduled him for today. So coming up about 10 minutes from now, as a matter of fact, which means let me go ahead and get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365.
Headline, LSU starting quarterback to enter transfer portal. That might be sort of a repeat headline because Miles Brennan already did that about 2 months ago. About 2 months ago. Max Johnson this time, and this is, say, a week after Brian Kelly's introduced, and there was a conversation, and Max Johnson is going into his third year on campus. He would be. He started, I don't know, what, 15 games or so? That's a lot of experience. He's developed some bad habits, and it's out of self-preservation, but all that stuff's correctable. He's a big, strong kid, and he's smart, and now he's experienced at that level, et cetera, et cetera. And he was told he would have to compete and go win the job. And he's like, nah, not really work for me. I've already put in my time. So he is gone. In an example, who said big bank take little bank? Is that Ice Cube? All right. Yeah, example of big bank take little bank. And a place with T. Boone Pickens should never be described, or at least the remnants of his bank account, as Little Bank. But Oklahoma State's Jim Knowles hired as Buckeyes' new D.C. Ohio State went to Stillwater, Oklahoma. Here for your coach. You know what Oklahoma State's response was? Which one? Like, there are times when you realize what's going on, you're like, yeah, go ahead. You know, if you were cellmates with Mike Tyson back in the day and he wanted your lunch, just leave me what you leave me, Mike. Go, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to fight? Oklahoma State, we're going to dig in against the Buckeyes. Three words. No, you're not. Big bank, take little bank. And in the world of – folks, LSU just took from Notre Dame. So, yeah, when you value football – Ohio State does, and so does Oklahoma State, but not as much, and it doesn't mean as much in Stillwater as it does in Seabus, and that's because what's going on for the last 125 years, that's just how it is. Mark Whipple is now at Nebraska as offensive coordinator. I saw him recruiting, actually. It was interesting. I saw a picture of Mark Whipple recruiting for Pitt, and then the next this was Tuesday. Or actually, it was yesterday I saw it. And then later yesterday, I was like, yeah, he's not the coach there anymore. Huh? Get him a raise. He's at Nebraska. Boom, there you go. I got other stuff. Consider yourself up to date. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk with Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, it continues. And somehow, one two-lane football topic just isn't enough for today's show. And I don't know how that's ever possible. No disrespect to Tulane. And I think anybody, like, we're on in Louisiana, the Tulane fan's going, really? He's going to talk about us twice? It's actually about the Southeastern Conference, though. It's not really about Tulane. I was talking earlier about the ability to do two things, and then that's you choosing to be relevant in college football. The ability to do two things. First of all, just amend academics, admissions, you know, what you have to take as a freshman, et cetera, get your academic footing, maybe as a red shirt, you can do that. But then also choose to spend. And I was saying that Duke right now, they're a smart school, and they seem boxed into only the ability to hire the smart coach. So I was talking about how Tulane and Georgia Tech were two smart schools who really chose how to not compete when they left the SEC altogether. There is a continuation of that story. Believe it or not, yes, two reasons to talk about Tulane football in the exact same show. If that ain't a tease to hold you, I don't know what would be. But I told you before we went to break, I'm going to be joined by a very special guest I always love catching up with. From the Reese's Senior Bowl, executive director down yonder in Mobile, it is Jim Nagy. Jim, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Chuck. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, I appreciate your time as always. And, you know, there was Rosenblatt, which everybody knew. And then about 10 years ago, they're like, yeah, let's upgrade. So even the history and the ghost of World Series past, now you got wider concourses and better concessions and everything. Senior Bowl, same thing. Ladd Peebles, about as much history as you're going to find. But look at the shiny new crib. How has the move been now that it's been a couple of years?
It has been it's been a game changer, Chuck. You're right. I mean, you think about the coaches that coached at Ladd Peebles Stadium. You got Bear Bryant that used to play Alabama games there. And then you talk about the Senior Bowl with Paul Brown and Don Shula and Tom Landry. So there is – and all the greats, you know, all the Hall of Famers that played in the Senior Bowl. But being out on the campus at South Alabama has been a game changer just from – like you talked about, amenities. We went from, I think, 8 points of concession to like 90 points of concession, wider concourses, bathrooms. So, and more, most importantly for our players, it's just a great playing surface. It's a great atmosphere. We were only at a quarter capacity last year, which was about 6,200 in a 25,000 seat stadium because of COVID. But we'll be able to pack that thing out this year, and it's going to look like a college football Saturday out on that campus, and give people to come down kind of one last tailgating experience before the following August.
Yeah, you know, the phrase, I think the saying is the draft starts in Mobile, and that is not an overstatement at all. And I do want to, and you can be candid here if you want to, attendance locally. This is a TV show, first and foremost, for me. And then secondly, I know for the NFL coaches and coaching staffs and scouts, it's about the week of practice. How has it been making Saturday not just a formality? Oh, yeah, we have to have a game as well. Because all the NFL teams, they're gone by Saturday. How is it getting the local ticket sales and all that improved?
Well, it's been easier with 15,000 less seats,
yeah.
That's for sure. But really, like you said, the draft starts in Mobile. That's kind of our mantra for the past 3 years. And again, you look at last year's draft class with 106 players drafted out of the game, which was 41% of last year's entire draft class. It continues to build. And I think with the scarcity of tickets now, there's a little more urgency. There's more demand. And the venue change, the tailgating experience, all the different activations. It's just a different vibe. But you're right. You know, there's over 900 NFL folks in town during the week. As you mentioned, most of them leave. We usually do get a rep or two per team that stick around for game day. But just to build out the week, we have a Players Mardi Gras parade on Friday night because this is the home of Mardi Gras as well.
Yep.
We have a concert downtown, which the first year we did it 2 years ago drew 20,000 people. We've got a Senior Bowl Summit event that's going to be great at the Sanger Theater downtown that's going to be hosted by Kirk Herbstreit. And we've got, you know, all the big boy college coaches, James Franklin, Sark, Brian Harsin, Mel Tucker. That list goes on and on. So we've really tried to build the week out and give people a reason more than just the game or more than a couple practices, a reason to come to Mobile for it.
I had seen, I think, Alante Taylor when he said yes, Fedarian Mathis. I think maybe James Cook maybe a couple of days ago or recently had said yes as well. There's competition. These guys, there are other All-Star games they can go to. What's the pitch, and why does so many of just the top elite talent say yes to Mobile?
Well, I just think you look over the last 20 years and what this game's been able to do to kind of to separate itself. And this predates me. I mean, Phil Savage did some great work here, and before him, Steve Hale. So, I mean, it's just you look at the draftable players, the amount of first-round picks, the fact that the two coaching staffs from the NFL teams and where they kind of start with the draft order. So if we started right now, it'd probably be the Lions and the Texans, I believe, are those first two. And that's a big draw. You look at this year's quarterback class, and we could have Kenny Pickett, Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati, Malik Willis from Liberty. Those guys are committed. There's a couple high-profile juniors, Bailey Zappi at Western Kentucky, and they all want to be coached by these coaching staffs, right, and spend a week with those guys. So, that's really the selling point. It's just what we've done and created around here. And honestly, Chuck, our best recruiters right now are the players that have played in the game in the past. And, we treat them right down here, and they have a really good experience. And hopefully they go back and talk to the guys that were coming up under them in the past years and help sell the game.
Now, this is just a personal thing, and I hope everybody listening enjoy this along with me. I've asked you in the past about guys like Kyle Duggar. Well, he was in the game, right?
Yeah. Kyle from Lenoir Ryan. Yep.
From Lenoir Ryan, and he's down there and went in the second round of the NFL draft. I could ask you about, Velus Jones, for instance, and everybody knows him. Tell me about Jalen Tolbert, because he's a local kid who gets to play in his home stadium down there, and I think that there ain't going to be a player on either roster this game is a bigger deal to.
No, Jalen, we've got three Mobile guys, and you brought Velus as one of them. And then Roger McCreary from Auburn is another one, the great corner who played great in the Iron Bowl. But no, Jalen's a special guy. You know, he went to McGill-Tulane High School here in Mobile. I think he's the fourth receiver in Sun Belt Conference history to go over 3,000 yards. Right now, he probably projects, depending on who you talk to in the league, there's really kind of it's more of a narrow range. I mean, everyone's got him in the third or fourth round right now, heading into the Senior Bowl. So he's a guy that projects to be at minimum a good third receiver in the league. He's got a great body for it. He's got a great catch radius. He can run after the catch. He's a skilled receiver. I mean, he would start on any SEC roster, maybe outside of Alabama with Mechie and Jameson Williams, but no, Jalen's really talented. And again, we did an invite process with he and his parents and captured some video out at South Alabama. And it was great. It shows what this game means to these kids growing up in the community. Jalen's mom brought out some old black and white photos of him at practice with Dexter McCluster and Ben Tate, the old Auburn running back out of practice, 12 years ago. So it's some of those stories of the guys that grew up in the area and playing the game. It is special for those guys for sure.
All right. So like a guy like Velus Jones, as I had brought up, an NFL scout, because you were a scout for 2 decades, when you all talk, I mean, you don't, hey, tell me about Velus. Oh, he had 74 catches. That's not what you're going to say because, I mean, and flesh this out and use Velus if you want to. It's not the stats. It's how the kid got to the stats. It's what he physically did out there. If a scout asks you, hey, I hadn't watched Velus Jones, tell me about him, you're not going to give numbers necessarily as far as catches and yards and all that. Just give a bird's eye of his play, what he is.
Yeah, it's not about stats, Chuck. You know that. I mean, we had a running back in last year's game, Chris Evans from Michigan, who had 16 carries as a senior. And then he gets drafted by the Bengals, and he's their backup running back right now. So it's not about stats. No, Velus is a guy that, coming into the year, he would not have been in the game. He played his way onto the roster this year. He had a phenomenal year. The return value, both punt and kick, really helps Velus. The thing about him is he's really strong with the ball in his hands, and he's got a gear. I hate throwing out the name Debo Samuel because they are not the same players. You know, Debo played in the game a few years ago, and now you could make an argument he's the best receiver in the NFL. So I'm not saying Velus is at that level, but they're similar in skill set in the sense that you wanted the ball in this guy's hands. And everyone in the league right now is looking for a Debo-type player that they can get the ball to quick and do damage after the catch. And that's what Velus is. And he's a starting-level returner at the next level. So he is at the receiver position. He probably moved up the board as much as any player during this fall, and he really played his way in.
Another guy similar to what you're talking about, Damian Pierce. You know, they only let him use one football, and there were, you know, Malik Davis. There were just a lot of talented guys down there. Give us a scouting report on Damian Pierce and what his projection to Sundays is.
Yeah, I think Damian's a guy. I brought up Chris Evans, very similar, even though Damian's got more touches than Chris did, but very similar. Underused guy, and I get it now in college football. You got to keep everyone happy with their touches or they're hopping in the portal. So I understand what coaches are dealing with. But, no, Damian, when you watch him, we said it in the office, the best way to describe him is he's an NFL running back. I mean, this guy's big, thick. He runs angry. He's hard to get on the ground. He's good in the pass game. He's played on special teams and been a good special teams player. But he's just that guy. He does not go down on first contact. And when you're a scout, I mean, that's what I always look for in running backs is, like, how hard is it to get this guy in the ground? And Damian is so strong in his lower body. Like I said, he runs violent. He's going to be one of those guys that is going to be a better pro than college player, because I really think if Damian gets in the right situation, he could be a starting NFL running back, and he wasn't even that for Florida.
Last thing, we got like 60 seconds. What do you think an NFL team wants to do with Jeremiah Moon?
That's going to be a great question. You know, seeing Jeremiah Moon, I go back to my Patriots days. I really feel like Jeremiah could have played any of our four linebacker spots when we were in an old 3-4 back in the 2000s Patriots teams. But, yeah, he's played off the ball, and he's instinctive doing that. He's long enough to play on the edge and set the edge, and he has some pass rush to him. So I think the great thing about him is you could probably plug him in anywhere. I think what teams need to figure out where is the best fit. But he certainly is one of the most versatile linebackers in this year's draft class.
All right, Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy, you got Reese's pieces on property already?
Yeah, we got some hanging up on our Christmas tree. We decorate our Christmas tree with all the different football helmets, and we've got a bunch of Reese's product on the tree. On my way out the door yesterday, I grabbed some pieces off the tree.
All right, real quick, no lie, 30 seconds. Did I see Panini is a sponsor?
Yeah, Panini came on.
Wow.
This is our second year. And, you know, they're the official trading card company, the National Football League.
Yeah.
So this is cool. The guys came to Mobile last year, and they left with their very first football card. And they're gifting a NFT to all the players this year, kind of a one-of-one unique NFT. So now these guys can do with it what they want. They can give it to mom. They can sell it on the internet and make a lot of money. But, no, Panini's been an awesome partner for us.
What Topps is for baseball, folks, that's Panini for football and hoops cards, man. That's big time of them being the association there. Jim, appreciate it as always, brother. We'll catch up again as the game gets close.
Yeah, Chuck, happy holidays.
Same to you. Jim Nagy again, Executive Director of the Senior Bowl. Yeah, Panini is – they're in Dallas, based out of Dallas, and if you remember the old Donruss name, Donruss, you can still find cards with the Donruss brand on there. That's now under Panini. So it's about honestly, they're the coolest looking cards out there. And so it's a college football player who's like, wait a minute, no, now I'm on one of those. This is really, really fun.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Frosty the Snowman
on the
was
side
a
of my fridge.
Happy soul.
And if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, you know that you've got the same thing. We have a list: yellow legal pad, black ink pen, life rule, sports rules. Sports rule: quarterback is the most important position in the history of any sport. Now, I don't even know, like I said, you know, curling. Maybe the guy with the broom. I don't know what fencing, like maybe the coach. I don't, whatever. But quarterback, which is why I say when we talk about most important, most impactful, most desperately needed upgrade, I said when talking about football, you always have to take quarterback out of the conversation because it's always the answer. A B-minus quarterback is worth way more than an A-plus tight end or safety or receiver or anybody else. And Bryce Young proved that he was more impactful than an elite defense, all 11 guys. And going into the game last week, so many of us were looking at that and going, I like Georgia. We didn't expect Bryce Young to have time, but he's a quarterback. And when you are a great quarterback with a potential win on the Heisman Trophy, then you can win any game. I want to welcome on now a guy who actually has a vote for the Heisman among other credentials on his resume. It is Russ Mitchell. Russ, how are you?
kicking the tires, lighting the fires, baby.
Bryce Young on Saturday. I'm not going to ask you necessarily who you voted for, but that is the kind of game that if a voter was on the fence and you saw that performance against that defense, I said, like, during the game, I was like, this is over. Everybody, Kenny Pickett, enjoy second, whatever.
You know, I always vote before the conference championship games. I always have. I always will. I think that, you know, if you're trying to give an award for the season and not that we've created these money grabs, which are these conference championship games, because of the fact that everything's expanding and not every kid gets to play in the 13th game, then I always vote before that. But boy, what a game, man. What a game. He did such a good job of avoiding the rush. And I don't even want to call it scrambling because it was better than just scrambling. Scrambling implies like there's no purpose. You're just running around trying to stay alive. He avoided the rush. And it wasn't just to race and run. He avoided the rush to throw and just did a spectacular job for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Now, the kids are out there, and they're bleeding and sweating and executing and doing all that other stuff. How impressed, though, with Saban / the staff in that they figured out something that you can't figure out a mismatch against the defensive front. That's a physical thing. It's not a mental thing.
Yeah.
They turned it into a mental thing. They turned it into a chalkboard thing.
It is such a good point, Chuck, because it wasn't like this was a fluke.
No.
Alabama had six drives. They had five drives that were at least 75 yards and another that was 62 yards. Six offensive scoring drives that were almost the entire length of the field. That's nearly 600 yards of offense. You know, and I guess at some point we have to ask ourselves, you know, how weak is the SEC East compared to the SEC West that, you know, I mean, how much of this is – because, listen, this is an Alabama team that looked like crap against LSU, Arkansas, and should have lost to Auburn. And you know, and then they can go out 6 days later and put up a staggering total against – a supposed number one defense in the country. So excellent job by the coaching staff at Alabama.
Daniel Russ Mitchell, get him on Twitter at Russ Mitchell CFB. I have an opinion about Kirby Smart. I think like if he were driving from his home in Athens to New Orleans, you know, he's going to Mardi Gras. I think Kirby would get to Houston before he would stop and ask for directions. I think he is the most deep. I am dug in. Won't change my opinion, dude. But with me, it doesn't matter because it means I just win a couple of exits extra before I turned around and asked for direct. I don't think Kirby's going to win, and it has to be his way.
My mother told me never to say anything if I didn't have something nice to say, which, of course, anybody that's been listening to your show over the last decade knows clearly didn't listen to that advice.
You let mom down.
I agree with you 100%, man, 100%. You know, the funny thing is here, if not for Tua coming off the bench, you know, a few years ago, he's already got his first national championship, and who knows how it would have changed. I don't know. I don't think it would have changed anything. He is a stubborn person when it comes. He believes. And you know what? Listen, they were 12-0 and were ranked number one. They'd been playing the best football, the most complete football of any team in America.
He can middle
Alabama,
finger every one of us.
Alabama
absolutely.
Alabama hasn't played a game like that all year. They haven't had one game all season where they played like that. Come on. If you're an Alabama fan and you've watched every single game this year, you're sitting back, you turned the TV off, and you looked at your significant other, and you said, damn, that was the best game we've played all year.
If you were father to a 17-year-old quarterback recruit, I have said that that is the only position I would not send my kid to Athens for right now. You know, Jake Fromm, I don't know if you saw this. He may start for the Giants on Sunday because Glennon's hurt and Jones hurt and whatever else. So maybe Jake Fromm gets his first start. He's already been cut twice and was a fourth or fifth round pick, and that's who it's worked out, quote, best for. There literally has not been a single quarterback who has come through Athens under Kirby who it's worked out for. What would you do? You're dad to a 17-year-old four-star, and he wants to go play for Kirby.
Oh, wow. Now, that's a really deep question.
Literally
because,
not one.
You know, the truth is that there's only, you know, there's only 30-plus jobs in the NFL as a starting quarterback. And your chances of your son making it to the NFL and staying for any meaningful period of time are almost zero, even if he is a four-star person. So, you know, I would be looking more to the more longer term. Personally, I'd be saying, is my son going to live in Georgia his whole life? You know, is this where he's going to build a family and do these sorts of things? Because then if you go to that school, then you're set for life. You're set for the rest of your life. So, you know, to me, that carries more weight. And I think that we get too much of these, you know, everyone thinking just in the second, just in the moment, about where their son should go, you know, to get to the NFL.
Okay,
I think it's much deeper than that.
And it was for me because I didn't play. And I was looking at schools in my life ever after. What if you are, because if you're transferring after your friend, like Harrison Bailey, he's not transferring because he wants a deeper educational experience. He's transferring because he's like, I got to get to the league. If your dad has been your agent since you're 10 and the focus, the only goal of going to college is playing in the NFL, if that's the goal, if you're that dad, are you sending him to Athens?
No. Not with the offensive coordinator that y'all have – not with the stable of offensive coordinators that you've put up there, no.
All right. Let's talk Brian Kelly and him fleshing out the staff there. First of all, were you offended by the speech at halftime? I was like, guys, he ain't a pinata. He had a goofy moment. So what?
Who cares? Listen – you know, this again is like, you know, if the guy goes off and wins 11 games next year, nobody's going to remember any of this.
No, he'd put a piece of hay in his mouth if he wanted to.
Exactly. This is like the off season. As far as nobody, like none of his staff coming to be with him, again, who cares? He's not there to win to be the mayor of Baton Rouge. Nick Saban is one of the most surly human beings on the face of the earth. And yet he still manages to come.
Brian Daboll left to go live in Buffalo, New York to get away from him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Go look at his tree. Go look at Kelly's tree. He continues to get guys to come and coach for him because he's at good spots and because he's a good coach. He knows how to coach other coaches, even if he's a jerk. And, you know, I think this is a great hire. I really do. I think that ultimately – if you can win a national championship in Baton Rouge with Coach Orgeron, Les Miles, and a young Nick Saban, you can certainly win one with Kelly. This is the most – if you think about it, this is the most experienced head coach with the greatest resume. The only thing he doesn't have is national championship. With the greatest resume that LSU has ever – hired at the football head coaching position.
If you are Max Johnson, why are you leaving?
I don't know. Actually, you know, I personally think that's a poor decision. I think that you're leaving. There could be some stuff going on behind the scenes. I'm almost sure a lot of it's behind the scenes. You know, maybe you think that Kelly's style is not going to fit.
He was told that he had to compete. That, like, yeah, you had the most experience, et cetera. But, hey, come spring, let's go out there and compete. And I don't know if that was part of the decision. Maybe it was just offense, X's and O's or whatever. But I'm like you. I'm thinking this is not guaranteed to be a step forward for the young man.
Yeah, all these things, you know, especially, by the way, you're the de facto starting quarterback at LSU. You're only a junior. It's like, where do you want to go?
That's the situation you transfer into.
Yeah, maybe there's another spot that's a little bit better, but how much greener could the grass really be? You're going to have a ton of talent around you. You know, let's even say next year's not that great. All right. Well, then you're a senior with, you know, the talent. You've got a bunch of – and you have one big blowout year. You're a four-year starter. You'll be a hero in the state of Louisiana for your life if, you know, if things don't work out and you want to go be an insurance agent somewhere. And – you know, you'll have that shot to make it to the NFL. I don't know. I find this to be 20-year-old person angst.
Last thing for you, and this is, I mean, I think the bowl game you play Garrett Nussmeier. But as soon as he takes the first snap of the game, there goes that's the fifth game of the season he's played in. Boom, there goes the redshirt. I don't know. When Russell Shepard was there, you could at least say, all right, we're going to run the option. Russell, you get to play quarterback finally. You always wanted to. You just do that, don't you? You got to take the bullet here and say, all right, Garrett, here, there goes the red shirt, but you're going to get all the snaps. They don't have a quarterback other than him.
I don't care about bowl games, unless it's unless it's a championship game, or something that's material like the Rose Bowl.
You get a strong safety who ran the veer in high school and say, all right, we got 2 weeks, let's put in the option.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't burn his red shirt for a useless bowl game, for a 6-6 bowl game. You're going to burn some cats. You're going to burn, like, the 23-year-old senior that he could be, where just like Joe Burrow, he's got almost no classes. He's got like two classes he's taking online, and he can live in the football operations building just studying tape all day long. You're going to burn that kid for one useless bowl game?
Well, the rules of football make it fairly mandatory. Someone does take the snap.
He can run the ball from the snap, man. I mean, I've watched Arkansas play an entire season where they snapped the ball directly to McFadden. So, you know, just who cares? You barely have a coaching staff, man. And what bowl game are they in again? The Weed Eater Bowl or something? Who cares?
David Lee lives. Russ, I appreciate it as always, brother. Thank you so much.
Talk to you later.
All right, Russ Mitchell again. Russ Mitchell, CFB. Wasn't it David Lee? Wasn't that his thing? When he was at Arkansas, the Wildcat. I'm trying to remember that if he was the – I'm trying to – because then he was in the NFL with Dallas. I'm trying to remember. I think it was David Lee was the guy who said, all right, we're going to go Wildcat. I think he was behind it. And then it wouldn't even spread to the NFL. That was Saban and the Dolphins unleashed it against New England. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We will come back and wrap up on this Wednesday next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I don't know if he would be interested in coming back, and I don't know if there's true interest. I think from a fan perspective, you always say, well, let's put the old band together. That group of coaches is no longer available. Many of them have retired, would not come back. Some are coaching elsewhere.
Mike Bellotti, former Oregon head coach, and he knows what it's about there. He was the OC there back in the late 80s when Oregon and Oregon State, they played to a scoreless tie 1 year. Don't even begin to think it was a defensive battle. That was Oregon and Oregon State. It was nuclear winter when it came to college football. And then it wasn't. And it came back under – he took them to the Rose Bowl, for gosh sakes. They joined the – I mean, I've said that when Penn State joined the Pac – the Big Ten, Oregon, that same year, popped up. And suddenly, instead of a Rose Bowl that looked anything like what you found familiar, if I said Rose Bowl was going to be Ohio State or Michigan versus USC or – Washington, and I might have said USC or UCLA, folks, that had covered like 85% of the games. And then suddenly you turned it on and it's Oregon and Penn State. You're like, wait a minute, that game can't even happen. So Bilotti was there through the late 00s and handed it off to Chip. And then obviously, you know, Chip took the national championship game, but he's just commenting that because he joined the media after that. But he's just commenting saying that it does not look like anything currently on my radar right now. I mean, it's not going to happen, but you don't know that it's a reality. You don't know if Chip even wants to come back to Oregon, much less if Oregon wants to have him. So I said earlier before we were bringing Jim Nagy on that somehow one Tulane football topic is not enough for today's show. One more thing about Tulane leaving for the Southeastern Conference. And that happened in 1965, after the 65 season. Tulane informing the Southeastern Conference in December of 1965, we will leave at the conclusion of this academic year, eventually set in motion Lincoln Riley taking the USC job. And it is not even Kevin Bacon stuff. Tulane leaving the Southeastern Conference in 1965 eventually set in motion Lincoln Riley taking the head coaching job at Southern Cal, as well as literally every major off-field event in college football the past 30 years. Late 80s, about 20 years after the Green Wave left the Southeastern Conference, Tulane decides to call an old friend, SEC Commissioner Harvey Schiller, and ask back in the conference. Now, I think this was 1987, and everybody in Birmingham's like, "Yeah, no, we're good. Really, we're good, Tulane." And for almost everybody in the Birmingham office, it was a big yuck fest about Tulane calling. I won't back it, because remember, folks, you know spatially what this was like. It was only about 20 years after they left. It would be like Miami, right? It's about the same, almost exactly. Can you remember Miami and Virginia Tech playing in the Big East? Okay. In 1987, almost everybody could remember, oh, yeah, Tulane, they were in the Southeastern Conference. Of course, I watched them. We got David in his late 20s, Dan in his late 30s, they were in the Big East. It had only been 20 years. The SEC's like, no. After they hung up on Tulane, big laugh around the office, everybody except Harvey Schiller, commissioner. The phone call from Tulane started Schiller musing, who would be interested in joining the Southeastern Conference if we extended an invitation? Who would we be interested in inviting if we expansion? That's interesting. Tulane, you know they have more SEC championships in football than Mississippi State and Kentucky. Tulane has more football titles in the SEC than half the current conference. But Schiller made the correct call. He took the call, just not the school. I believe the phrasing was, one Vanderbilt is enough. But the call from Tulane is like, wait a minute, expansion. Hadn't thought of that. And that's how South Carolina and Arkansas got invited. What up, Dan?
Not much. I got to give a tip of the cap to Sam Pittman and his coaching staff for what they were able to pull off a couple of days ago. Jaden Hazelwood, did you see that? That he is now going to play at Arkansas.
And he's
going to
be the Treylon Burks position.
There we go. So, of course, we will see what happens there with him, likely gone. And then KJ Jefferson as well, what happens with him there on the offense. But if nothing else, I think that you can point to places that are able to get players like Hazelwood to say yes as places that offer stability. And remember what I told you too about what I think that Sam Pittman soon could become at Arkansas is almost like somebody that it's somebody that you trust, and also that somebody, if you see a coach going there, there's a reason why they're going there. We know that Sam is a man about organization. We know that he's a man who cares about his players, and we know that also too he is a man who is going to do it all with character and class. So that is why you can bring on a Kendall Briles despite what people say about him with his past. And they can say, you know what, that's just fine. With players like Hazelwood, he's going there because he says, I see the vision. I see what this guy is doing on the recruiting trail. And I see not only is 8-4 attainable here, we can do even better going forward.
And what he sees is a guy who played receiver for this coach in this offense, this field, this competition. He's going to be the first, I think, the first receiver taking the NFL draft. It's about Sundays, not Saturdays. That's almost every single one of those calls. All right, wraps it up on a Wednesday. Dan, David, everybody listening, thank y'all for getting in. 22 hours from now, I'll be back with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.